Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley. Sitting alongside me today is Josh Grind. Josh, thanks for being here.
Thanks, PJ. We are trying something new. We've got our video podcast room set up here. And PJ, it was really, I was tired of not being around archery and archery people and competitions. So we set this up to try to get some community and bring people back together and at least talk about archery.
Absolutely. And on this day, where just less than an hour ago that we heard about it, the Prime Minister of Japan finally announced that the Tokyo Olympics are going to be postponed. They will not be held this summer. And with us is Canadian Olympian Crispin Duenas. Crispin, thanks for being here.
Hey, PJ. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, let's just start out. How many times have you been to Olympics? Three times, I believe?
I've been to three Olympics, Beijing, London, and Rio, and I was training for Tokyo, and currently I'm still technically training for Tokyo. It's just going to be a little bit further out than originally expected.
Right. Now, Canada had announced last week that they were not going to send athletes if the Olympics were held this summer. So you have kind of been ahead of the curve here as far as not going to the Olympics. How did that feel when you saw that announcement from your country?
Well, I think, first of all, I wasn't very surprised that we had pulled out, given all the circumstances with everything going around the world. I was really proud of our Olympic committee that we were taking the first steps of kind of trailblazing this way into showing how concerned we were for the athletes' safety and health. And also, like, not just Canadian athletes, but all the other athletes that would be at the Olympics. And ultimately, it gave me a little bit of relief because I wasn't panicking with the type of training I was doing at home. As a lot of people know, I do lots of physical training at home, but not being able to get to a gym means I don't have all the equipment necessary that I usually would have. And also, I don't have a range at my house. I have, like most archers, were 3 to 5 meters that they can get in close quarters when not living on a farm or anything like that. But training for 70 meters is a little bit harder to do when you're at a fraction of the distance.
Yeah. Yeah, we should mention you're at home right now in Toronto.
Yeah.
That's where you're talking from.
Yeah.
So many things to break down there. First off, yes, we all know that you work out. You make me feel bad every time you put your Muscle Monday videos up there, and I realize that I can't do any of that stuff. But how is that for you you're into physical fitness, and now you mm-hmm. just have to sit at home and do whatever you can do there.
Yeah, well, to be able to do all the stuff that I do in the gym, I can't actually do at home, but the weather is getting nicer out here. I'm going out for a lot more runs on the street. I do have a TRX strap system that I can rig up to a tree limb or a soccer post that I can like do some exercises in the park, you know, away from everybody else so that we're still practicing safe social distancing and everything.
Yes.
In terms of like bars and barbells and dumbbells and everything, I don't have all of that stuff at home because I just didn't feel a need to have them, but doing lots of good body weight exercises is still key, and doing lots of cardio and also like practicing eating healthy. There was this thing that I saw in the media called the Quarantine 15, where everybody's quarantined and they're gaining 15 pounds because all they can do is just sit and eat all the time. So
guilty.
I know for the first couple of days, I think that's what I was at too. But then you start to realize like, hey, I don't need to eat as much because we're not doing as much physical exercise. So your intake kind of is dictated by the physical activity that you're doing. But if you're not doing much, then you don't need to eat as much. But you can still make sure that you're eating the right kind of food. And that's a big help with staying physically fit. And just like I've heard that abs start in the kitchen. So that's one thing that I'm trying to hold to here.
That's why I try to spend a lot of time in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. Well, So this would have been your fourth Olympics. And so I'm wondering if there's a difference for you. The Olympics are not canceled. It's not that you're the only one not going. They're just postponed. But what is that like for you? I mean, I'm sure there's disappointment there because you'd been training your indoor 20 or 18 meter rounds. You've been killing it there. I'm sure you were doing very well outdoors as well. How does that feel though when you realize this summer, which you've been working for, you are not going to the Olympics?
I don't know if this is a bad thing, but I actually don't feel bad about it at all. I'm not disappointed. I'm not sad. I'm not angry. I'm not anything like that because this is something that's out of my control. I mean, why get mad about something that's out of your control? There's no point. You're just wasting valuable mental energy on that. So I know that my shooting has been really good indoors at 18 meters. Leading up to these past few weeks, I've actually been shooting really, really well at 70 meters. Something this winter has just clicked, and I've shot more scores over 690 in practice than I've ever shot in the whole history of my archery career. Wow. In the past couple of weeks. So I was really riding a high coming into the whole COVID-19 outbreak. But again, I didn't get angry about the potential of the Olympics not happening or whatnot. We were still in the midst of our Olympic selection process. So we had just completed our first stage of our Olympic selection, and admittedly, it didn't go as well as I would have liked to for my first stage. I still came out of it, according to the numbers, in first place, but it wasn't as good as I know that I could do. So coming out of that, I knew the training that I needed to work on and the aspects of my shot and my mental game that I needed to work on. I think that's something that I can still work on even under lockdown and quarantine. Being able to get my mental mindset into shooting without actually shooting is a skill that a lot of high-end archers can attest to. I'm sure Brady's got the same thing. He's got visualization like out the wazoo. I know that he's talked about that in spades in interviews that he's done. So I know that it has worked for me, and a lot of top archers are going to be relying on that in these difficult times.
So now you're, sorry, you said you're not angry. You know, it's out of your control. But there is a mental kind of deep breath. Okay, we're not doing the Olympics this summer. So how does that, you know, you talked about the things you're working on. Is that become a priority and importance now? What changes in your mental preparation for Olympic training now?
That's actually a really good question. So the changes that actually happen are the timing of everything that I'm doing and with what intensity that I'm doing them now. So like I said before, I was kind of in a limbo of when I will be potentially shooting my next competition, but I know that the biggest competition of this summer has now been postponed. So, you know, there's always those small things that you had an idea that you might want to work on before the Olympics, but you're kind of saying to yourself, no, it's probably something I shouldn't mess with or anything like that. Right. That now comes onto the table that I can start to investigate some small, you know, tweaks and things about my shot or equipment or anything that I was otherwise, you know, a little apprehensive to test beforehand. But the timing of everything is what changes the most about the Olympics not happening. Not to say that I was actually going to the Olympics, but the weight on my back of panicking about training and making sure that everything was good to go and hit the ground running type mentality now is a little bit off my back. I can kind of take a little bit more relaxed approach to training for now. And once all the dates start rolling out, then I can start periodizing and making sure that I'm peaking at the right times. For example, last year I wasn't able to get out to any USAT events because of all of the competitions and qualifying that we had to put more importance on overseas. And I think that since the USATs are such a great way of having really good competition on home soil or on home continent, I should say, I'm going to be looking forward to getting out to the USATs this year for sure. I know Arizona Cup has been pushed back to October, and I'm actually looking forward to Arizona because that's one of my more favorite tournaments. It's a good way. It was a good way to get yourself kickstarted into the outdoor season, but now it's going to be in October and hopefully a little bit cooler than the usual.
Right. Do you think you would have felt, your experience now, fourth Olympics, mm-hmm. do you think you would have felt different if this was your first Olympics?
Probably, yeah. I know that there's a lot of people out there who this is their first Olympics, and there's another handful of people who have this as their first ever time their sport is in the Olympics. So right. I can't even imagine how that must feel, like rock climbing, for example. Like yeah. It's their first time in the Olympics, and I know that I've seen a lot of hype about them and lots of publicity going into the rock climbing community, and now to have it postponed, I mean, it's going to be a big mental hit for them having the postponement. But again, any high-level competitor will just take a step back and say, hey, they're just postponed. It's not canceled. So our Olympic Committee has already said any qualified spots that we have up until this date, they are still going to be honored, and you still have your spots. So if you have a spot, you're still going to be going. It's just a matter of what time, like when are you going? So
Had Canada secured any spots for archery in the Olympics, or were you still working on that?
We have one men's spot, and our women were still working on qualifying their spots. The the competition in Monterrey, Mexico was where they were going to try to qualify their individual spots. I think it was like a week or two ago. Should have happened, but it didn't happen.
Right.
And obviously Berlin is the big one where everybody's going to try to qualify their last team and individual spots. And that's what Team Canada's men's side was working towards, was making sure that we can get a full team qualified in Berlin.
Well, I know I had talked to you in Vegas, and you had taken, I believe, a sabbatical. I'm not sure if that's the right term, from teaching. You're a physics teacher.
Yeah.
So now you get to go back to school, right, and teach, work the rest of the year, as soon as the prime minister allows it?
We don't have any school. School right now is deferred indefinitely. They were supposed to go back to classes on April 6th. The kids just finished something called, we call it March break. I think the Americans would equate that to spring break.
Gotcha.
And so they just came off of a week of that. But because of all of the problems happening just before March break, the school system in my province, at least, said that there was going to be another 2 weeks mandatory school cancellation after March break. So the kids are going to get 3 weeks off.
Right.
But because of how this has snowballed, and we're trying to make sure that it really doesn't come back to bite us in the butt, they have now said that barring that 2 week extension of March break, we're going to be extending the quarantine for school kids all the way until indefinitely. We have no idea when it's going to be coming back. Because, I mean, if you really think about it, schools are a big melting pot of where everybody comes together.
Yep.
And there is no social distancing, especially if you have 30 kids in a classroom. There is no way you're going to get a meter or two in between each kid, unless we have class outside, right? But that's not going to happen in Canada in the middle of early spring.
I don't know the answer to this, but what is it like in Canada now? Are your businesses shut down as well? What's allowed to happen there and not allowed?
So actually just announced yesterday in my province of Ontario, they're going to be shutting down all non-essential businesses. Non-essential businesses are places that are not like food, fast food restaurants, pharmacies, anywhere to get medicine. I think veterinarians are fighting to be considered essential.
Yeah.
So, for example, archery clubs around me are all closed down now.
Right.
And therefore, archery shops are closed down around me. I can't get my manicure pedicure done because those are closed down.
Darn it.
Yeah. So businesses like that have closed down, and a lot of people are following the requests of our government, because they know that ultimately it is the best thing and the safest thing to do. And the quicker you get this done, the quicker we can get back to real life. And we're not taking any chances. There's still, they're actually talking about enforcing a police mandated shutdown. So I think the provincial police, much like your state troopers, can go to any business at any random time. And if they are still open for business and they're not an essential business, I've heard that they can get fined like something in the order of like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
So they're trying to crack down to make it real serious. And you know what? I'm not a medical professional. I have no idea what this is like. I'm going to go with what the medical professionals are saying.
Right.
And if they are saying that we need to just distance ourselves from everybody that we are not usually around, then that's what we got to do.
That's what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, what's the sure. What's the climate like? You know, you said you're going to the park and working out, not weather climate, mm-hmm. but people around, people's attitudes, and yeah, what's it like in Canada?
Yeah, it's trying to social distance yet again. People are even if they're outside, we're told to stay at least 1 or 2 meters away from the person next to you. So that's what, like almost 3 yards away from somebody next to you. My wife and I went for a run yesterday, and there is a notable change in how people see other people coming towards them on a sidewalk. There's a shifting of, like, somebody is going to move over so that some other people can pass and keep a little bit distance. And we have been told by our government to try to stay a little bit further away from people, even in wide open public spaces. So, I mean, it's definitely not like what you're seeing in like Florida, where people are still flocking to the beaches and everything. We're trying to take this real serious up here.
The beaches of Ontario are not loaded with people right now.
My wife laughed at me when she moved up from Florida and said, "This is your beach. This is not a beach because it's on a lake, and it's yeah, there's no white fine sand here. It's just goose poop all over the place." So,
what's yeah. the what's the temperature up there right now?
Right now it's 5 degrees Celsius, 7 degrees Celsius right now.
Okay.
So times 2 plus 32, that's about 40, yeah. Let's say 45 degrees ish. And it's supposed to warm up, and by warm, I mean, it's getting up to 10 degrees tomorrow, which is like in the 50s for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crispin, getting back to archery, I have maintained this as long as I've known you, but you are a physics teacher. You have to have some advantage over every other archer out there who is not a physics teacher. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong on the technical aspects of everything, but getting out to practice is the definite make it or break it if you're an archer. If you have all of the knowledge and know-how, that doesn't compare to actually getting out and shooting your bow. I will attest that it does make me it does give me a little bit of an advantage when I'm setting up a bow, or when I'm trying to diagnose a problem with tuning, or if I'm changing something in the stabilization setup or something like that. Having that knowledge and background actually does help a little bit. I think that if I have that, as well as being able to train at the level and frequency that a professional archer would train, then that would definitely go hand in hand and make me a really, really, really good, well-rounded archer.
Well, I think the physics side, man, I watch your exercise videos. Your physics definitely plays into the physical. your balance is something that I'm very jealous of. But you said there at the amount of practice that a professional archer puts in, you do. I mean, you're on sabbatical this year, but you typically yep. are a full-time teacher and archer, and I'm assuming next year you'll probably be back on that path. So what does that look like for you? You know, I think a lot of people see Olympian or hear professional archer and they think all the guy does is shoot a bow. But yeah. In the reality of your day-to-day life, what does training look like with teaching?
Well, I will say right off the bat, if I only shot a bow full time and that's all I did, I think I'd go crazy. I've always said that if that was the case and that was my life, I would look for a part time job just because I need a little bit of a different atmosphere and a different location than an archery range. And I'm a big proponent or a big, like, what I try to tell people is that if you only live archery and that's all you do, if you have a bad day on the range, the rest of your day is going to be bad. There's no escaping what has happened on the archery range. So I like to have that separation. So I will say that if I was just a professional archer, I would also probably be working part-time at like Best Buy or Panera or something. I don't even know. So yeah, what September is going to look like after this is obviously I'll be a little bit more back into teaching because we're starting this this annual cycle over again. So in the previous September, I was teaching a lot, taking substitute jobs, just because it keeps me in the classroom. It keeps me, you know, up and running in what's going on with the school system. But my plan for this past year was teach from September till January in whatever jobs I could. And then once January hit, that's when I told all of the school boards that I was, or the schools that I was with, that I was going to be taking time off to qualify and do all the training and everything. This coming year is probably going to look a lot like that again. Depending on when they decide to hold the postponed Olympics, because I've heard that the Olympics could be postponed as late as next summer, but that still leaves it open as to what can happen in the interim. But I don't think they're going to have a summer Olympics in the middle of winter.
Probably not.
Like in Japan. I know it happened last time in Rio because it's Rio. Rio's, yeah, that was technically South America and everything, yeah. But Japan is in the Northern Hemisphere. So their winters are going to look like winter. And not like a Rio winter. So it'll be, for me, teaching during the day and shooting at night, just like any regular wannabe superhero, right?
How many arrows do you usually shoot a day when you're in that scenario?
In that scenario, there is a little bit of a time crunch because I have to get out to the range, and depending on which range I go to will basically dictate how many arrows I'm shooting. There is a public range that is very close to a lot of the schools that I teach at, and provided that the bales are in good condition and the ground isn't a swamp and everything down there, that I can get a good 300 arrows before sunset because it only takes me about 10 minutes to get to that range. Oh, nice. But if the weather is getting a little bit colder or nasty or whatnot, I have to get out to our indoor 70 meter range. That's actually a club, and it's a 24 hour club dedicated just to archery. We don't share the space with anybody else, but it does take me about 40 minutes to get out to that range, which equates to 80 minutes in the car there and back. And then also sharing the range with people who are shooting 18 meters and I'm trying to shoot 70 meters or vice versa and everything. So on those days, typically I'll be looking to get to about 200 arrows. But like I've said before to a lot of people, if you go into your practice session with a plan of what you want to achieve for that session, whether it's working on your release or working on improving your score in a certain number of arrows or working on your tournament mindset, you don't need to shoot a ton of arrows to achieve your goals. You still need to get volume in because you need to have that muscle memory and everything, but you don't need to go out and shoot 400 or 500 arrows every day and potentially kill your rotator cuff if you're not doing it properly.
I wanted to talk to you for a minute about your Vegas round this year, because you had a ridiculous round and yet Brady Ellison shot a 900. So, but I think it was the last day you only dropped two nines, and I forget what your scores were the other 2 days.
What did you end up with? So on the last day, I believe I shot a 96, like a 296.
Oh, 96. Okay.
If I'm remembering it correctly, which I think I shot 95, 96.
That's it.
So my Vegas round, I was actually really happy with. For the first couple of days, I took what I could from those and learned from them, and then was able to shoot a really good third day. I was actually kind of proud of the fact that I was actually, besides Brady, another consistent shooter who didn't have really huge fluctuations in the score. I was looking for that consistency across the board.
Right.
Whereas I think Florian Kalland, who came in third, started off at about 290, and then the last day he shot a 299. And right. a 9-point swing at our level is a huge jump. So, I mean, I was pretty happy with how I shot. The focus was just to maintain the shot that I always do. And that's something that's like, it sounds so elementary and easy to do, but under high, high pressure situations, that the person who can shoot the way they do in practice is ultimately going to have the most consistent shooting. So that was the goal of mine. And I mean, watching Brady shoot that 900 was just astounding. And it, yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know what that guy is on. I mean, like,
that was my next question I was going to ask. Yeah. You know, we're all from the outside appreciating this 900. You know what it takes. What's it like for you to be there and to see that firsthand from a fellow recurve shooter?
It's amazing. I mean, I was there when he shot the world record for the 720 at Pan Am's. Luckily I was already done shooting by the time he shot his last arrow and came off the line screaming. And I know that I would have, if I was at full draw and that happened, I might've been like, oh my God, what was that? But it was good to see. He had his game face on. You can tell when some archers are just in that zone. He looked like that for the entire time that he was shooting in the Vegas round. I think there was, for him, luckily there was some learning that he probably did from the World Archery Finals. If you're a good archer, you're always learning from what you're doing. And I'm fairly certain that he learned from the small little things that he was able or unable to execute in the World Archery Finals and take that and apply it to his final day of the 900, because admittedly shooting those last 30 arrows in a clean round has got to be one of the hardest things to do. But having learned what he learned from the first 2 days of shooting 300 and then shooting on Saturday night came to him being able to execute on Sunday. And I mean, he's human. I know he is, because in the final few ends of shooting his 900, he let down.
Yeah.
And right. Brady doesn't normally let down, right? So that's how you know that clearly he was thinking about it, but he was still able to execute it because he was that mentally strong and trusts his shot that much.
Talk about that a second, the mental strength that it takes to let down, because I can assure you I do not have it. If I come to full draw, that arrow's going.
It's a skill. Sometimes it's a bad habit. So I think there's a fine line between being a skill and being a bad habit, and you're always riding those lines if you've been able to coach yourself to let down. Being able to be at full draw and say, no, this shot is not going to be exactly right, and being able to let that shot down is a skill that does take a little bit of time to learn. But then you can also have the other side of that coin and say, like, if you're at full draw and the smallest thing doesn't feel right, it could be like where your pinky toe is placed in your shoe and you let down. That's where it like starts to hinder your performance, because now you're letting down on almost every shot.
Right.
I can admit that I've been one of those people where if something just doesn't feel right in the shot and I'm not happy with how it's going to go off, I'll let down. But then I realize that's my third letdown that end. I've got to shoot these arrows, right? So they're like, some of us want to be like those, like you, where if this shot is up, it's going to go. But other people like you wish that they could still let down. So yeah, again, it's that fine line.
You don't want to be like me. I'll just leave that right out there.
I'm pretty sure PJ's never thinking about his pinky toe on the line.
No. I think I actually helped out Greg White at Lancaster. He was having a little bit of a rough round, and I think he was thinking about his shooting a little bit too much. And he even made this comment during the commentary that he had during the finals that I was his mental coach. and what I could see that he was clearly just way too invested in like trying to shoot 11s instead of trying to execute his shot. So I said, hey, Greg, come here. And he was like, okay. And I was like, do you mind if I ask you a question? He was like, okay. I was like, I want to see if you can actually do this. And I was like, can you name 10 body parts that are only 3 letters long with no slang? And he was like, what? And I was like, name 10 body parts that are only 3 letters long with no slang. So then he started thinking about it, and he was like, okay, well, there's lip, there's eye, there's ear. And he got like all the usual ones.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the call to the line came up, and he had to go to the line and shoot. And you could see he was still thinking about it. And he went into this autopilot. He loaded an arrow up into his bow, knocked it on, made sure it was like in the right orientation. And then he drew back and he shot an 11. And then after that, he didn't even look at the target. He just went back to looking up, like, and he's like trying to count and trying to figure out those things. So that's another state of like being in this autopilot. And he came back and he had shot a 33, but he didn't even care. He was still like, I can't figure out the last two. So
that means he got 8. I don't think I'm at 8.
That's great.
I'm sitting here trying to think of it. And he did. He actually, I asked him how he shot that day, and he came back to me. He's like, oh, man, I was in my own head. And Crispin, I think he referred to you as his Yoda, actually, that day.
That's awesome. I did not hear that story.
Can you tell us? Because we're going to have, well, you know, do we have Crispin give us the 10, or do people need something to do at quarantine? They can just figure it out at home. Because I'm confused.
You know, they need to type in. When we post this online, they need to list the 10. We can't.
Remember, it's no slang.
No slang.
Right. No slang. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fair contest.
Yeah. We need to have that because I'm not gonna get it. I'm gonna need to look at the comments
to get them all.
It was actually a bonus question on a test that I had in high school. I had a teacher who liked putting bonus questions on that had nothing to do with the material at all. So. Another one, what are the actual dimensions of a 2x4? And not many people know that one unless you shop at Home Depot a lot.
Yes. That's awesome.
Crispin, you do post a lot of stuff on social media. Oh, yes. And so where can people that are at home now with maybe more time on their hands, where can they follow you and stay connected to you?
Well, right now, my most active account is my Instagram account. So that's Crispin_Duenas. And I do have an athlete page on Facebook. And that one, I give a little bit more insight into like my breakdown of a competition or a result that I've had. So that one is for people who like reading a little bit more because my posts are a little bit longer. But for example, a breakdown of my win in Rome last year or my win in Luxembourg this past year. Those are the types of things I'll be posting to my athlete page. So it's Crispin Duenas Athlete on Facebook.
Gotcha. And anybody out there, if you haven't seen his Muscle Monday challenges, you got to see those because it's, I think it's
fun to note that I did one that another archer named Mackenzie Keyboards took and doubled. So on one of my previous Muscle Mondays, I did something called the 70-meter challenge. Something that I made up, and I actually did burpees for a full 70 meters. And anybody who's watching that video will actually see at about the 25-meter mark, I actually rolled both of my ankles because I hit a hole in the ground.
Oh!
But I kept on going. It sucked, but I was like, I need to do this. But if anybody wants to challenge the Muscle Mondays, I mean, by all means, it's a great way to give yourself something different to do. Another person actually tried to do the most recent one I did called Thor's Hammer.
Yes.
So if you look at Thor's Hammer, there's somebody who said, hey, I got to try that. And if you look at his Instagram page, sure enough, he's out there doing that. It looks like in his basement, which is amazing because I don't even have all that equipment in my basement, but it's a fun way of getting some physical fitness going in an otherwise not very physically demanding sport.
Sure. Well,
that's awesome.
I think PJ and I should jump in those
challenges
on Mondays.
I told Crispin, we'll post those. I would kill myself if I did some of the stuff that he does.
If you want to see PJ.
18-meter burpee challenge, if you can do that for 18 meters, that's a big challenge.
Yeah. Right there. I mean, if you want to see PJ do the 18-meter burpee challenge, comment. And we'll get that on camera. Brother. Crispin, we'll definitely tag you in that so you can watch that as
Please.
Well.
Please. I got to get up for that one.
Thanks, everybody, for another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. We certainly appreciate you taking the time today, and we definitely appreciate Crispin taking the time. Crispin, thanks so much.
Thanks, Crispin.
Thanks for everybody for tuning in.
Absolutely. Folks, this is the Competition Archery Media Podcast, which you can find wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for joining us.